I guess just what's the right word? Properties that are really in bad state, and they have to do with abandoned foreclosure type properties. It has public health issues. The mayor's priorities of complete neighborhood and equity would be impacted by this program or supported by this program should it be restored. We have two positions, excuse me, one currently that assist with the extreme distress property enforcement program. It's a senior housing inspector position. We received last year a one-time sort of support for that position. We are asking that this position is continued through ongoing funding versus one time. In order to multiply and improve upon the efforts that this program yields, we're asking for another position to help expand that program. And so a second position, we're asking for that to be part of this package too. This request is ongoing funds for both positions, and in order to abate property situations such as to board up a house or clean up property, abatement funds is requested as part of these two positions, $150,000. That will help with a variety of troubles and issues that are evident with these type of properties, help to clean up the properties. Decision number three, the last one, has to do with enhanced rental inspections program. This is also fairly new. We realized there are properties that would have a large complex, for example, and one apartment may have problems, and we find out, well, the other 10 or 20 might also have. So we're able to, when we go to a property, conduct multiple inspections to deal with, in a more comprehensive way, those type of issues. So this program focuses on rental properties that are chronically out of compliance with housing maintenance codes, and they contribute to a more complete neighborhood and equity and opportunity objectives as well. It serves low-income residents, people of color, and it began in outer northeast and southeast in 2012-13. We're wanting to expand, and we have expanded actually, to inner northeast and southeast and North Portland. This ties in with equity goals of being able to provide these high, really beneficial level of service throughout the city, not just in certain geographic area. We have three housing inspectors that perform those duties, and this decision package, if it's not approved, would impact and reduce back the enhancement program to only outer southeast and outer northeast. So that this request is to provide ongoing funding for three housing inspectors to enable program to continue the expansion of the program into north and inner southeast and inner northeast. In short, those are the requests. We are appreciative of the challenges the city has, but we know that these housing inspectors and the land use programs relative to the goals of maintaining the city's livability, safety, that without these additional positions, there would be impacts, would be less housing complaints responded to, less nuisance situations being able to be abated, and our equity goals of increasing in our workforce composition of and people of color and being able to really walk the talk would be impacted if some of these cuts are received and if it's not fully restored. So appreciate your time.
Okay. Thank you very much. Doug, do you want to walk through your analysis, please?
Good afternoon, Doug Lee, City Budget Office. A key issue in BDS is the allocation of general fund resources between the land use and the neighborhood inspection programs. The bill received $2.2 million in ongoing general fund, and this amount is now being allocated equally to both programs. The land use program is three times larger and in a significantly stronger financial position than the neighborhood inspection program. The housing emergency and homelessness situation have significantly increased the workload impacting the neighborhood inspection program. The program does not generate sufficient revenues to fund its operations, and the current setup of allocating general fund equally to both programs create a shortfall in this program, and as a result, BDS has repeatedly requested additional general fund to support the neighborhood inspection program. In the meantime, the land use program is in solid financial position. The program is well reserved, and it is projected to finish next fiscal year with an excess reserve of over $4 million. Given the program's financial strength, we recommend that the full general fund amount be allocated to the neighborhood inspection program to address urgent needs affecting the neighborhoods and communities. Regarding the decision packages, we recommend a 5% reduction. BDS also requested additional general fund to support the extremely distressed property enforcement and the enhanced rental inspection program. We support these programs, and we recommend that they be funded by program reserves in 16-17 and program revenues in the out years. That's all I have.
Let me just raise, just sort of flag an issue here, which you've mentioned, the extremely distressed property enforcement issue, and also sort of foreshadow the work session we're going to have next Tuesday, because I think, you know, depending on how we decide some policy and practice issues, there's either more or less money available for distressed property enforcement. Just about a year ago this week, actually, I went on a ride-along in the East Precinct with Officer Brian Schmautz, who had an encyclopedic knowledge of all the vacant and abandoned houses in his patrol district. And I was really shocked at the number of them, because I remembered the late 80s, early 90s, when there were 2,000 vacant and abandoned houses in North and Northeast Portland, and some CDCs were formed specifically for the purpose of getting those houses back into people's hands, like Post, that then worked themselves out of a job, because there aren't 2,000 vacant and abandoned houses in North and Northeast Portland anymore, but there are a lot of them in East Portland. And I was also just really shocked that he had spent so much time, and he and other police officers spent so much time going back and back and back to these houses because there had been squatters in them and everything else. And I had the same reaction then that I have now, which is that in this real estate market, when you can put a sign up in front of anything and sell it in a week, and when a landlord can recover the cost of operating a rental property, there's no excuse for distressed property in this city. There's no excuse. It's just bad ownership. And so the auditor's been involved, and you'll be involved, I know, in this work session next week. She has someone who works for her that I didn't know we had, called the foreclosure manager. You know, we have not exercised all the authority that we have. And again, if this was 2008 or if this was 1992, and you know, it's tough times for property owners, I'd have all kinds of sympathy. But you can sell damn near anything for twice what you paid for it in Portland, Oregon today. And you can rent damn near anything in whatever condition. And we shouldn't allow people to rent it in whatever condition. We should allow them to rent it in habitable condition. So I'm a hardliner about this. And in other words, I want to bless this program with enough money to go out and nail all the violators. But I expect to be reimbursed by the violators, because in this market, there's just no excuse for us not selling property, you know, foreclosing and selling property that people aren't maintaining. So I just want to flag that. We're going to have a longer work session than this on this topic next Tuesday. But it is nuts for us to not have enough money for these folks in Paul's bureau to do their job, because, again, in this real estate market, it's just abuse of ownership that we're dealing with here and the failure to exercise our own authority. So I'm not quite sure how we get there from here, but just trying to find a few more general fund dollars out of the general fund we have now, as opposed to actually collecting on the embedded value of this property that is costing us a fortune in police resources as well as everything else, is, again, we're just, as an organization, we're crazy. Individually, one could perhaps understand and excuse the gaps in our collective system. But when you look at the condition of real estate in the city and the fact that we've got several hundred dead houses that should be getting fixed up by some young couple that wants a fixer-upper. Anyway, I'll stop sermonizing. But I'm not ready to just say, okay, there's nothing that can be done about these properties. It's just a cost for the city. No, it doesn't have to be.
Okay. So the property that met that description in my neighborhood for the last 4+ years was demolished in a day, cut down the 50-inch tree, and now has a building footprint that looks like it's going to be a whacking great house. So
That's one outcome.
And it's only for the single family. For the multifamily, we've heard from East Portland and elsewhere that those are exactly the ones that we need to be doing the routine inspections and not waiting for the tenants to complain because they're fearful of it, and we need to be able to fund that. So whether it's by general fund, from some bucket, from the housing fund bucket, I think we need to fund that. I have a question on the CBO's analysis, the City Budget Office. On page 6 of 9, it's talking about not funding the scholarships at Portland State University for diverse folks in the master's in urban planning. And the sentence says, CBO is concerned that the master's degree level may not be the appropriate level of achieving the Bureau's equity goals. What did you mean by that?
Well, I'll let Doug fill in if he has any more. I think the issue here was, and I think the scholarship program has not yet begun. Is that
right?
It was a proposed program for this year, which is another reason why we felt that it could be cut. The question we had, and you'll note there's another sentence in here that we've referred the decision package to the Office of Equity, and Dante will note that that actually has not yet occurred, so probably should have been a different verb in there. But the idea here was whether focusing on the master's level is going to achieve the equity goals in terms of or is that too late in terms of getting people into this pipeline and building the type of workforce that I think we're trying to build.
I'm glad you weren't meaning that we should only have receptionists who are people of color, because that's the way I read the sentence. What you were saying is that we should have assistance at the undergraduate level as well as the master's
program. And the question was really, you know,
the challenge
is it hasn't started yet and it's being offered up as a cut. You know, let's go ahead and accept the cut, but then also talk about if we're going to bring this back in the future, will it work? And I don't think we're saying that it won't, but the question is it at that point, are we too late in terms of you know, building a diverse pool, or would it be better to do something at the undergraduate level or even earlier? And I think that also, did you talk to the utilities? Maybe not. Maybe I'm thinking of a different conversation. I thought our utilities had programs that started earlier.
For the master's in urban planning, there is no particular undergraduate program that you need to go to in order to get into the master's in urban planning, so I think actually it is. But I'm glad you clarified that that's not what you meant by the sentence. So I hadn't read this briefing or this presentation before the previous one, and so I was saying how very important it is to me to have general fund money in land use reviews so that the public knows that we're not just doing whatever the applicant who is paying is doing. That we are looking at the public interest. So I'm very concerned at the proposal to change land use services. I'm concerned to read that it's been 92% fee funded anyway, to do away with any components of public investment in planners' understanding and being aware, which they are, but there needs to be a financial commitment that they are serving the whole public and not only the applicant at the counter. So that is very concerning to me that there's a proposed cut there. And I'm also mindful of all the training that Elshad and others did for me when I was the director of the commission in charge, that BDS has buckets, that some things you're allowed to use things for and some things you're not allowed to use them for. We had a discussion this morning about planning and whether the BDS bucket reserve could be used for funding the whole of a regulatory improvement code project. And so it would seem to me that if that shell game is allowed, that would be a more appropriate use of general fund dollars or land use review reserves to fund the recap program rather than making it 100% applicant developer funded. I'd be very concerned about that.
Commissioner, can I respond to those? Because that is really the key of our recommendation here. And we have asked this question. We did ask sort of the legal question. And the answer we've gotten back, and it actually, I mean, even going back to some of the early, both in terms of state law and city policy, is that the fees support a land use services program. the fees that we charge our developers. There's been a policy decision that you're, you know, very familiar with, because we've had this conversation over the last couple of years, that the cities wanted to have general fund investment there for a variety of reasons. What we're trying to raise to council is you're not required to. So there's $1 million of general fund supporting our land use services program. It could be 100% supported by developers. I would actually go the other way and say, you know, I'm not sure it's a bad thing for developers to be supporting a land use services program that also has some general benefit to the community as well. And what we're trying to put on the table on this recommendation is there is $1 million you could free up for your parks and your housing and your public safety needs. Whether council wants to do it or not is going to be, it really is sort of the key question when it comes to BDS's budget.
And maybe things have changed. Historically, for the land use activists in the neighborhoods, it was really important to us to know that there was a general fund investment. Another question I have is about the lien reduction amnesty that Commissioner Saltzman authorized as the Commissioner of Charge. That's in progress now. And what's the anticipated change in your budget, and where does that money go to?
It would be collected, and I can't remember what we're anticipating. Hopefully $1 million or less would come from it over the next. We just did a press release, so it's just in the works. And so folks are given a period of time to respond, and we'd see what comes out of that. It would be collected and go directly into the program reserve or revenues, and can be utilized in that way. So we shared it with Mayor Hales. You were pretty excited to hear that that was a possibility, that there's money out there that we would like to collect, even at a reduced amount, and it's an incentive, and hopefully can help offset some of the requests that we're making or the expenses.
Can I comment on two things about the PSU scholarship? It's still in the works, and it's a pilot project. So we start with the master level, and then it's going to be expanded to undergrad too. So it's just a pilot right now, so that's why we're starting. And there is actually a diverse pool of candidates at the master's level too.
And is there any kind of expectation that the successful graduates will come and work for us?
So if I could, since I actually benefited from that, the land use planning profession is not very diverse, especially in the Oregon and Portland area. I actually received my master's from Portland State, and when I went there, I was one of two, maybe, person of color. It hasn't changed much over the years. The planning position that we have at BDS is very competitive to land, and having a master's degree makes you more competitive. So to think that a person of color not having a master's degree would be more competitive than anyone having a master's degree is a fallacy. So we push back and explain that that's why we're going for a master's degree position, and that's what lines up well with being competitive. And so I went through the program, and it helped with promotion opportunities. It's not a requirement in a job classification, but reality, applicant A, applicant B, one without a master's degree, there is a difference.
I thought that there was a sort of a more general reason to have some general fund supporting the land use activities, because I thought that there was some idea that it's nice for you to have a stable source of funding to smooth out just a little bit, at least, the booms and busts you have based on permit fees. Am I making that up, or was that a justification we talked about before?
Thank you, Commissioner Novick. Actually, that's a good segue, because we actually shared CBO's analysis with both Development Review Advisory Committee and Budget Advisory Committee. And we have a joint memo to the council that we're going to distribute now. So basically, both committees strongly disagree with CBO's recommendation to permanently move general fund from land use to neighborhood inspections or anywhere else for that matter. Those monies support activities that generate public benefit. And it's whether it's answering a zoning hotline or providing services to the customers at the Development Services Center with no charge and explaining zoning code to them, or whether it's supporting regulatory improvement code amendment package at Bureau of Planning and Sustainability, or design overlay zone assessment project, also at Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. State rules actually prevent the Bureau from charging customers above the average cost of providing service, average or actual cost. So there's a statute that prevents us from doing that. And I can quote that if you guys want to look it up.
Actually, Elsha, just on, because I think this is an important issue. We've had this conversation with the city attorney who has said there is not a requirement that you can charge in your land use fees for your land use services program. There are certain restrictions, but I want to make it clear.
Yeah.
There are two issues here. One is a legal issue, and if you have an opinion from the city attorney, that's important to get out because we haven't seen it. The other, though, is a policy issue, and I think to the extent we have the policy rationale, it's important for council to
actually
maintain that flexibility.
I think the burden of proof is on you guys because you actually made a recommendation to move the money. Mm-hmm. So there is a statute that clearly states 277-171-1751 that we cannot charge above average or actual cost. If you take the general fund away
for
land use program, correct. If you take the general fund away, we will need to raise the fees. Are you talking about the that we have excess reserves? Yes, we do have excess reserves in that program. But when you talk about taking $1.1 million out of the program permanently, even over a 5-year period, it's $5.5 million. That's 55 positions, approximately.
You have no plans for a fee increase in your 5-year window.
We are not.
Right.
However,
and I think that's
because our fees are already at actual or average cost, if not higher than that.
And one of the issues we raise is whether that's an appropriate, again, policy decision for the city to keep those fees flat while our general fund continues to go and support this program. I think that's why. But I think it's really important that council understand they do have the flexibility to make
Correct.
This change.
They do. However, the other thing to keep in mind is that land use program is the most volatile program in our bureau. It responds to any economic downturns first. So if the recession hits, that would be the first program to experience any reductions, any dip in revenues. So it's very important to have that stability in the funding for that particular program.
And general fund could be shifted back in future years, correct?
It could.
Have that ability.
Potentially. However, again, and I think we discussed it with the mayor, that the Bureau wants to retain that flexibility as far as how the Bureau manages its general fund.
Just an observation. In these conversations, what's most helpful for me as a decision maker is having the policy question framed, not having staff debate it. It's most important for me to know what the pieces are. If there's a legal issue that we have a question about, then we'll call the city attorney in because we do our own independent analysis. But it is primarily, and one of the things that I appreciate about the Independent Budget Office is they provide a great service whether I actually agree or disagree with their analysis. I actually find sometimes the analysis that I disagree with more valuable than the ones I agree with because it forces me out of my comfort level. But I appreciate that bureaus will sometimes have a strong disagreement with an Independent Budget Office recommendation. And our process is better for that. And I think, it's just as long as the issues are framed and everyone has a chance to sort of make their case, that's what's valuable. Is not necessarily litigating the case.
This is more, and you can get back to me on it because it may take a little more. In regard to the enhanced rental inspection program, East Portland Action Plan has discussed it, advocated for it because of the need out there. We have, as housing said, an enormous amount of rental units that are in very poor condition. But in regard to when people violate it, I'm trying to figure out how the penalties work, for lack of a better word. Is, are they one-time penalties? If it isn't fixed, are they repeat penalties? And I just would like a synopsis of how the penalties work, because often if something's a one-time penalty, if I'm a landowner and I get hit once, what is the incentive to make me fix that, if there isn't really enough of a stick to make it happen. So I'd like to know more about, I really support this program, and I would, but just like to know, is there more funds we can obtain based on what the structure of the penalties are, and is there a way to it? Do we need to be changing those if they're not? If the penalties are not encouraging the landlord to fix it, then maybe the penalty should be a little bit stronger, is my thought. Right, yeah,
Okay. Thank you. A couple questions and then a comment. One, in terms of the expected fewer nuisance abatement inspections that you're able to do, is that, or are those self-initiated versus you received a call, or where do you get that number from, or what does that number represent?
The number is tied to abatement funds available to mitigate the problems. And so I think that specific 27, if I'm not mistaken, if we didn't receive 150,000 additional funds for abatement, we wouldn't be able to clean up or correct 27 cases. And so the money, I think we currently have about $400,000+ for abatements throughout the city. And so if we're short 150,000, that equates to about 27, if I'm not mistaken. So those are properties that are already in the system that need to be cleaned up.
Yes.
The Bureau is excited about this and very committed. So we have discussed it, and we definitely will explore all possibilities to make this a reality. That's how important it is to us. But again, like the policy question, is it general fund or is it permit fees or program fees? We believe it should be general fund, but we will find a way to make this happen. We have those provisions and programs in place here. A quick 30-second, we notify a property that's in violation. They have 30 days to correct. If they don't correct in 30 days, then they're assessed a penalty on a monthly basis. The fee is doubled after 3 months. That was changed from 6 months years ago as an incentive to correct the problem. If that's not working, we can go to hearings officer and ask for higher fees, which could be up to $1,000 a day. Part of the problem is the penalties are assessed, but they're not collected or paid. And so hence we are in this problem where we might not have enough money to support the program. And so that's where general fund can sometimes offset those costs.
So a couple of things. Going back to Commissioner Fritz's comment about her neighborhood, at $1,000 a day for 4 years, that's a lot of money. So if I go in and buy that property, do I have to pay the fee, or is it the previous owner? I mean, I don't know how you can last 4 years with an abandoned property in a neighborhood. It just doesn't make sense to me.
It happens, but it doesn't
make sense. If we're $900 a day, then times 365 times 4 is a lot of money.
So there's some triggers. That's where maybe a foreclosure could come in. And so, you know, those are things that we're in the process of discussing.
But why would it last 4 years? I mean, I'm sure that the community was complaining.
Actually, right. They were probably not. I mean, they mowed the grass. They didn't have squatters. It was just there.
If it's bad enough, we can get a vacate order and demolition order and tear it down. That is, we do if what we don't do is do foreclosure, but we can abate it by demolishing it, boarding it up, mowing, and so forth. The foreclosure is a different program.
Good.
We have authority. We're not using it in the market that allows action.
So one other thing. I appreciate Commissioner Fish's remarks about the CBO and disagreements. I think that was important to say. I appreciate that. Regarding this disagreement about that statute, I mean, will we get an answer? Somebody, I'm assuming the city attorneys will ultimately rule who's right and who's not and what we can do and what we can't do. Will we hear an answer to that?
We'll provide some follow-up, yeah.
Okay, thanks.
Just a comment on the scholarship program you're talking about, just because I come from education being on a school board, and we also have a problem with getting diverse teachers and stuff. Besides at this master level program, which to me is up at the top, you have to start a little sooner.
Yes.
Do you, on your lower level positions, do you encourage them and provide educational benefits to encourage them, say they have a bachelor's, to get a master's? You know, because often your minorities will come in at the lower level, because in our case with teachers, they come in as assistants. And we try to help and encourage them to go back to school to become teachers. So I was just curious if you're working also at that level to get the diversity you want.
In short, yes, and in a variety of positions. We understand that starting earlier is better. And so we're looking at high schools and partnering with high schools, actually going out, looking at reintroducing trainee plans for inspectors that can start at a lower level and then build up to becoming a certified inspector position. So throughout the Bureau, unfortunately, we, aside from the general fund, the fee-supported positions and program of the Bureau is doing really well, so we're able to do a lot more for our organization and community.
Follow up because of your comment. Have you been out to David Douglas? Because we're really looking at those lower positions and how to get kids in them, and we do happen to have the most diverse population there is around. So
I couldn't tell you for sure. I know we've been
Well, I would suggest going out to David Douglas since people of color and non-English speaking are dominating there.
I just wanted to respond to your question and point out where some of the responsibility lies for these different parts of this process. And Development Services assesses liens in my office. We have the recording function, so the liens are recorded in my office. And the foreclosure manager works with people who have liens on their property to make sure that they're paying on their liens. And as soon as a property gets close to the foreclosure line, often the homeowner or the property owner will start paying on the liens. And at that point, there are different provisions in code that need to come into play. If it's a police nuisance or a safety issue, then there are other parts of the code that come in. And that's what we're going to have the meeting about, is where all those pieces need to come together so that some of these properties could be dealt with in a way that they're not sitting in a neighborhood creating a big nuisance. But we all have individual pieces that we're responsible for. And in my office, it's the recording and the collections piece.
My apologies. I forgot to introduce my staff. Sorry. It's Deborah Siebert Morris. She's the division manager, business operations manager. Of course, Elsha Shiba, our finance manager. And wanted to thank staff that's not here. We put a lot of work into this. Work closely with the community and our committees. And we're strong partnership in trying to make the city a better place to live and do business.
Well, I think Paul gave some good closing comments right there. So thank you very much.
Hey, see you tomorrow.
Thank you.
Sorry.
We talked about that this morning either.
Oh, yeah, what Susan was saying. Yeah, because we were sitting actually.